Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome into episode 87 of the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes, and thank you so much for being a part of this week's episode. This week's episode is a first. We have never done this in House of L history, but this is a collabo episode. Michelle McMahon is my guest. If you don't know who Michelle McMahon is, you weren't paying attention during Blackhawks games over the last couple years. She did sideline reporting on those games, and we talk about why she's not doing sideline reporting for them anymore. You can see her on Big Ten Network for sure, and she has her own podcast, which is what we will get to as far as the collab part of this thing. We sat down, and initially what happened was Michelle had asked me to be on her podcast, and I was like, absolutely. She does a great podcast. You can search for it. As a matter of fact, you should search for it because it's the companion piece to this podcast, this particular episode. And she came to the Score Studios, and I said, well, we should do a home and home because I've wanted her on House of L. So we're sitting there in the studio and we're just talking and talking and talking. And we were trying to figure out how we were going to do this. If we were going to just take all of the audio and just release it on each one of our sites. If we were going to take turns, like I'd ask a question and she'd ask a question. But what ended up happening is we just kind of had a conversation. And then I went back and did a little editing magic and made her part of the podcast separate from my part of the podcast. So that's what we ended up doing here. I get part one. She gets part two. So I'm going to interview her in this episode. And you'll hear about her career and how she rose and all of that stuff. And then in part two, she turns the tables, and you'll hear it at the end of part one. And she did a great job interviewing me. And honestly, in part two, I talk about something that was really painful and something that I haven't talked about at all. I don't think I've ever talked about it publicly. So you can hear all of that stuff on her end of the podcast. So that's the collaboration. It's really one conversation. I took my half. She took her half. Her half right here that you're getting ready to listen to is pretty damn great. She is extremely interesting, has one of the best voices in the business. And what she went through to kind of stabilize herself from a mental health standpoint, I think is something that is worth you listening to. So I bring you episode 87. From the Big Ten Network, from her own podcast, the Michelle McMahon podcast. Here is my buddy Michelle McMahon, and we start out talking about how she is now taking acting classes. And I wanted to know, why is that the case?
Well, I wanted to diversify, as I told you, and I feel like I have the personality as an actor, actress of like, I have always, growing up, done like the impersonation voices. Like when I was little, like I did Lou Holtz, like to a T.
Really?
Yeah. Like my mom would be like at the Thanksgiving table, like, give them the Lou Holtz. Tell us, show us. So yeah, ever since then. But then I've also been told that I have a good voice for stuff like that. And I just, it's kind of fun. It's just fun to, I think it's always good to be learning too. That's the other thing that I wanted to just continue to expand upon what I've done. Like the world is, there's such a vast amount of opportunity if you choose to see it that way. So I think it's kind of a fluid, I guess, transition of like incorporating both into what I'm already doing.
So what have you picked up from your classes, whether it's voice classes or acting classes, that you feel like did a light click on and you're like, I should be doing that more even when I'm being a sportscaster?
Yeah. I don't know if there was like a moment in time that I was like, ooh, yeah. But I guess, I don't know if it's as early as like growing up, I watched Disney Pixar movies nonstop. I think that's like every little kid probably, at least in my era. And I don't know if it was as early as that being the voice behind the characters is kind of always a fascination for me. And then to actually think that I could maybe do that one day, that's like the big, big goal of like, if I could be a Disney Pixar movie character. I know they only hire like famous people for that, but hey, anything could happen. I was like, I could be like a cat or something, or like,
sure. You never know what happens on an audition.
Yeah. So I think that's just kind of like the inspiration behind it. And also like, I think there's such a magic when you pursue things, and I'm sure it was the same way for you with getting into this, is like when you have that natural innocence of like, it's just fun. It's just a fun spark of passion for you. I really feel like that's when things open up. Like that's what happened with my sports career. And I know with acting, it's not like I've gotten anything necessarily. And I'm not doing it because I'm like, I have to make a living doing this. I'm doing it because it's like fun. I think I could be good at it. I think I could maybe get, you know, something here or there. But
my good friend Maggie Hendricks has been doing some of that stuff.
Really?
And she loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And she met a lot of famous people in her class.
Oh, my gosh. Cool.
Yeah. She wouldn't tell me who, but she said one of them was a very famous author that does like the I can't even remember the name of the books, not the Twilight books,
yes,
but something similar in scope.
Okay, not like
and
Harry
popularity.
Potter.
No, it wasn't J.K. Rowling's, okay. but it was someone
cool
of like that level was in her class.
That's cool. Where was she taking class?
I think she was at the Improv.
Okay,
that she was taking classes there and enjoyed it.
I love
she
it.
Really, she got something out of it, too.
I love it.
Which is good. Can we talk about your sports career for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely.
And volleyball?
Yep. Played volleyball at Michigan. I was a walk-on. And that was a very defining experience for me. I was very humbled for 4 years.
Why?
Because a couple of reasons, right? Like, number one, you're used to being the best when you come from high school and you're not the best. That's kind of an arrogant thing to say, but like you're of the upper tier in your area, wherever you come from. And then
you probably had offers to go other places, I'm guessing.
You know what? I didn't think I wanted to play volleyball in college. Like I didn't even put any like feelers out there. Like I did it for fun. Like a lot of my breaks have come because I've like, I just do things for the, because it was fun. And my club coaches actually went behind my back, because I wanted to go to Michigan. I'm fourth generation. I was brainwashed. And now that I've seen all the Big Ten campuses, I'm like, I think I would have broadened my perspective a little bit. But not to throw shade at Michigan. I loved my experience. But I'm just saying, Madison, Wisconsin, I think I would have went to Wisconsin if I had a choice. But I it was in my backyard. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. But to your point, what were we talking about?
Talking about you.
Oh, yeah. My club volleyball coaches reached out to the Michigan coaches and said, like, hey, we have a girl that's like smart enough to get into Michigan. You should look at her for the volleyball team. We think she's good enough to play. And then got offered a preferred walk-on spot. But then after, like a week after they offered that, it was like off the table because they maybe were going to offer it to somebody else. And that was after the point that I was like, no, okay, I'm going to play volleyball at Michigan. And then they were like, wait, maybe not. So I was like, crushed before I got there. And then a week later, they re-offered it again. So it was a little bit of a rocky start there as is. But yeah. So being a walk-on was a challenge. You're not getting paid to do the same amount of work. You're just doing it out of straight passion. You're not always given the same opportunities as the scholarship kids. Mm. You're very tested in terms of how you're treated. It depends who your coaches are. But, yeah, it's definitely a good life experience.
So what was the moment in these 4 years. You stuck with it for 4 years.
Yep.
As a walk-on.
I almost quit. I was so close. After my junior year, I was convinced. But there were some situations that happened, and I was like, Mom, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I worked as a sports psychologist for 4 years. Like, I was borderline. Like, that's a lot of the premise of the podcast that I would love to pick your brain on, too. That's why I'm so passionate about mental health, and I have such an empathetic perspective of what these athletes are going through from a mental perspective, because it's a lot of pressure, like not only from the outside, but I think too for that kind of person that it draws to Division I athletics. And I know you've talked to a lot of athletes on your show. I've listened to them. But it's like that internal pressure that these kids put on themselves, kids, adults, whatever it is, that it's like your threshold of failure and success looks different than that of a student that doesn't necessarily play a sport in college. It's just, it's a lot to handle. But yeah.
Did you have, when you're sitting down and talking with a sports psychologist, did you have a breakthrough? Were you looking for, I just need to be okay with not playing anymore? Or were you trying to figure out, should I keep playing?
That's a good question. It was less about the like playing time, if we're looking at it from a literal standpoint. But I think for me that my time with, actually, I should clarify. He says he's not a sports psychologist. I call him a sports psychologist because he's not technically licensed as a psychologist, but he's has a master's degree in social work. Actually, you should talk to me. He worked with Tom Brady, Desmond Howard, all the like upper tier people. He's my favorite.
I'd love to talk to him. I got one of those at home. My wife has a master's in social work.
Oh, yeah. So she gets it.
Oh, yeah.
She gets it. And she's seen it. And she's, yeah. So I think my biggest breakthrough moment with Greg was, it doesn't matter what my external circumstances look like, what my current challenges at that time, as long as like I am 100% confident and true to who I am. And like that self-awareness piece is power. So the more I could get closer to the truth of who I was as a person through that experience, through all the heaviness and all the, you know, the anxiety and the depression that I for sure had that I didn't know I had in college, through just some of the messaging you get from the authority figures, you're taking in a lot and you're not good enough and you're not, one bad practice means you're a bad person. You know, there's so many areas that your mind can go when you're in a, you know, in a very mendable moment in your life, 18 to 22 years old. So I think the biggest breakthrough was, first of all, learning myself better than anybody else. And then second of all, what made me stick it out was like, okay, if I quit early, then they win. I want to stick this out because I know I'm good enough to be here. And I also want to pave the path for the people behind me in that way of like proving that you can do it. You can set your mind to anything and you can do it. And like, it's not allowing the outside to have any extra power over you than you give them credit for, which has been a repeated lesson for me in this, I mean, everywhere.
When you get to the end of senior year, mm-hmm. what did it feel like to be like, I accomplished this?
Oh, it was like a huge weight off of my shoulders. I didn't think I could do it, honestly. Like, there were some points there that it was more of a mental thing than anything else. Like, and physically, like, I was performing at a level that I was just, like, so far in my head that I knew I wasn't performing my best. That was really, like, freshman year. Senior year, I kind of came into my own a little bit. It was more of, like, a sense of freedom in that, like, I not only accomplished that, but I have a stronger sense of who I am. And, like, I don't have to answer to anyone anymore about what I can and can't do and what my belief system should be and what I think of myself. I don't need to listen to the outside voices. I only need to listen to my inner voice. And that's something I think that was the most powerful part of that experience of like, okay, if I can get through that, I can get through anything. Like I can literally, nothing to date has been harder than my volleyball experience. Like no boss has been scarier. No, like nothing has measured up to that, the challenges that I felt in that moment. It's been close for sure. But like, I think that's the freedom of like, okay, like there's pretty much nothing that scares me in this world. Like I can do anything.
How good a feeling is that?
It's awesome. It's awesome. But really, like, it doesn't matter. Everyone can get that lesson in any way, shape, or form in life, right? Mine came in the shape of Michigan volleyball. That was my biggest, like, unearthing moment of, like, you had to figure out where you are. Yours could be being from, you know, from where you come from and where you described in your podcast of, like, how you had to break free of some patterns that I know that a lot of people, you know, have that program in their mind of like, this is the cookie, this is where people usually go. Here's what, you know, that the breaking mm-hmm. the cycles. So it's like my lesson was Michigan volleyball and continues to be because this industry is not easy as a woman. But it's that continuously breaking the old
patterns
of beliefs, and then like really having that unwavering belief in yourself that it doesn't matter like what you're doing, who you're doing it with, like as long as you're like, I like being in my skin more than anybody else, and like I'm cool with this. There's literally nothing like what can shake you.
When did you know that you wanted to make a career out of this, that you wanted to do sports and be on the sidelines and be on these campuses and be on the ice and all of this stuff?
My senior year, actually, of Michigan volleyball. So I saw one of my old teammates doing Big Ten Network volleyball broadcasting. And at that point, I guess for some reason, it never really occurred to me that these careers are out there. Like, I was a communications and Spanish degree. I had no formal training, like none whatsoever. That's what, when girls ask me my path, I'm like, don't do what I did. I do not recommend it. I mean,
I actually
worked.
Like that, though.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, it was my senior year. I saw my old teammate. She was a volleyball analyst for Big Ten Network. And I was like, what? You could talk about volleyball and make money like on TV? What? That's a thing. So that's that. And I think it was also like me finding my voice, too, in a way of like, I think a lot of people in this industry kind of navigate to it for different reasons, whether, you know, it's a wide array. But for me, it was kind of also the like wanting to have the last word and like finding my voice in a sense of like having a little bit of a chip on my shoulder in that like, OK, maybe, you know, I wanted to prove myself extra, if that makes sense. But that can also get dangerous. I caution people like when your why has to be very clear. And well-intended.
So where have you seen that go wrong for people?
I think when it's the same, you know, similar lesson at Michigan volleyball, when you wrap up your entire identity in what you do. And that's easy for people that are on air to do because
that's
you
true.
Are praised. Your identity comes from this. People love you for, you're the Lawrence Holmes that everyone listens to every day. Like you, I feel like, do a really good job of separating that. And I would love to know more about how you diverge. So I'll probably turn this question back to you. But I think, in my perspective, and you tell me what you think, I think it's when people get too caught up on the ego side of it, where it's like, this is everything. And then when one thing goes wrong or one contract doesn't come through, then who are you? You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have a strong foundation to fall back on, I think that's where it can go wrong. And if you don't have a strong why of like, I do this because I love it and this, and I can give back in this way, and I can do this in this way, and it's not all about you, that's where it can be slippery slope if you're on the other side of that.
The balance of ego.
What do you
is
think?
The principle that I try to work at and I kind of live by professionally is lift as you climb.
I love that.
Like, I'm a big fan of it, and I think that it makes things pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of pride.
Not everybody likes to live by that rule, though, which makes it challenging to navigate.
Like,
who can I trust? Who can't I trust? Like, you can usually sniff it out right away.
Absolutely. And in our business, we see it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Especially with women. That's the other side of the coin where it's not just, you know, it's women on women of like, there's only so many roles and watching your back. And that part, I'm like, I took myself out of that race a long time ago.
You know what?
But it's so hard.
I actually had a conversation with my wife about this. My wife used to work in the industry. She was a radio producer at the Score. And then she worked at Sirius XM Baseball when they first started up. And I asked her about that because I've seen it. I've seen up close, like, people that you would go, well, wait,
mm-hmm.
Why are you not championing this? It breaks my heart when I see it up close.
Whether it's fear.
It's fear. That's
a lot of it.
What do you think? Where do you think that fear comes? Like, I think you're right. I think the idea of, oh, well, there's only so many slots for this type of person or this type of person or a woman or like.
Yeah. I think fear is a lot of it, but also a scarcity mentality, too, because for a long time, and there still is less women than there are men in this industry, and this is not like a plea cry of like, you know, I'm not being a victim of the situation. It just is. Like, you look at the numbers, you watch a football show, it's usually, you know, one female to every 10.
You might go female host.
Every 10 dudes.
And then
maybe female host. Oftentimes the reporter role is what the female embodies. If with the exception of like ESPN, Sam Ponder on that, or they, you know, there's a couple of shows.
Winnie
like that.
Nix.
But for sure. But the ratio, historically speaking, so I think it's too like the old paradigm, right? Like how do you change cycles Well, it's the new people coming in and breaking those. But in order to do that, you know, because the people who mentored me, you know, come from a different mindset. And then who I mentor below me is how I treat them and how I navigate the space. So that's how the cycle either perpetuates or stops. But I think historically speaking, like there hasn't been a ton of opportunity for women in sports. And that's changing now. I think the narrative's shifting on that. But there's been a, you know, if I help this person, she's younger than me, she's prettier than me, her shelf life is probably longer than mine. If I'm an older woman, I'm speaking of, you know, if you're in your 30s, you're pretty much in your prime of your career for a woman. I don't think that's the same for men. That's another challenge that's like a unique challenge to why a woman versus a man would be more reluctant to want to mentor somebody that's younger, better looking, going to take my job at the end of the day, because sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. Like I've seen it both sides, but it is an interesting dynamic that, you know, I've been always treated really well by, you know, the women in the industry that I've come up under, and I've been fortunate in that scenario. But I have also been backstabbed once or twice before, too, of like, okay, lesson learned, not somebody I can trust. And it'd be like me reaching out and overextending me, like, let me help you, you know, like, here's how to navigate this. And then it ends up coming to bite you in some ways, too. So there's so many different dynamics that go into that. But
when,
it's interesting.
When that happens, when you have a moment like that where you feel like you reached out your hand and then it got bitten off, like, what's that feel like for you?
It's hard because you are so well-intended, or at least in that moment, I feel like I was, like, trying to help somebody else out. But when it's, you know, repaid by the fear mentality or just the, like, the competitiveness, like the just, I know our industry is competitive and we all sign up for it, but when it's like, what's it worth at the end of the day if you're just going to tear other people down in the process? And you can sense it, like the, you know, when it's genuine or not, but it doesn't feel good. But also I do have empathy in that, like, I know what it feels like to also be in fear of there's not enough jobs, there's not enough work. How am I ever going to make it? There's so many girls that want this job. There's so many pretty people out there that want to do what I'm doing. So I can relate to that feeling because I felt the fear. I've just chosen to manage that in a different way.
I'm with you on that. I think that's probably like the thing that bothers me the most, because I try to be about lift as you climb. Mm-hmm. And to go back to the concept of ego, this is where it rears its head with me. I'm so proud of my team.
I love that.
Like, I look forward to, I joked about it when we were doing the nighttime show of graduation. Mm. You graduate from my show and then you go on and you do whatever. And I'm really proud of like the people that have either interned on my show or I came into contact with when I was a producer, like Nick Friedel, like Cassidy Hubberth. And I see them and I'm like, I know I played a small role, mm-hmm, in some of this. Like, there's something that still, Friedel came back. We did a thing over at Channel 5 a couple years ago and he was like, yeah, man, it's weird. Like, I'm on your tree. And then like that is a warm feeling.
Yes.
When you can hear someone say that they appreciated what you did for them and took it and ran. Mm-hmm. The ego aspect of it, outside of being proud, is you feel like you have some wisdom to share or some answers to give people. And when you offer that and then it's rejected, you're like, oh, all right,
cool. I guess I'll just go hang over here.
I'll go hang out. Over here. That kind of sucks. But like,
thanks for listening. Good talk.
When my team, when they graduate, and as we're recording this, like my EP, Tony, who you met in the, mm-hmm, hallway, he's graduating. Like, he's leaving here. He's going to start a new job where he's going to have more responsibilities and more money and more benefits. And it's hard because I don't want him to go because I think he's great at what he does.
That's such a tribute to you, though.
I mean, he doesn't have to be, but I'm all about kicking his ass out the door. Get out there and go explore. And whenever one of my people, like, move up, I'm so excited because I look at, like, what we've built and the opportunities. They were ready. Mm-hmm. Like, they were ready when the opportunities came up. They were ready. Mm-hmm. I'm very selective about who I will write a letter for.
Smart.
Because I want to know that you will do the work.
Well, you're putting your neck out for somebody. It's your reputation on the line.
Absolutely. And I've been rewarded far more times than I've been let down by that process. And the hope is that those people then take portions of what we all did right and then pass it along to someone else and then lift them up and try and on and on and on and on. And it's great when you see it bubble up and people have success. Like you want, like I want them to win. Like that's a team win, you know, like the team won because Tony's going to go do this great new job. Like what we do it the right way because look at what Joe has become and look at what, you know, look at what Tony's going to be doing now. Look at what Chris Tannehill has been doing now. Look at what Herb, like all the people that have worked with me.
Yeah.
Look at what Laura Britt is doing now. Like that gets me fired up. Like I almost get emotional about it because my hope is that the people that I'm hanging out with know that I'm invested. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just talk. Like I'm in it to help you. I'm in it to help you navigate some of the stuff that I went through so that you don't have to. I'm here to help you with negotiating. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about this over at Stadium, how I want more women to advocate for themselves in the negotiation process. And it's difficult.
Super tricky.
Because there are a lot of women that'll be like, well, if I push this, they'll hire someone else.
Which happens.
It does.
A lot of people will take it for a lot less money.
Yeah. And that's scary.
Yeah. It's happened to me twice.
I can imagine. Can we talk about the Blackhawks thing? Is that a comfortable place?
We can go there. I'll keep I'll navigate it with where I'm comfortable.
When they decided that you weren't going to come back, were you shocked?
I actually, yeah, because in April I was coming back. So it was a confusing situation for sure.
Because you seemed comfortable, like you seemed like you were having a good time and there was a good response to you.
Yeah, yeah, all those things are true, for sure. There really wasn't any, you know what, the door was kind of left open on that. I didn't actually find out until Twitter in August that the decision had been made. So I had been in limbo a little bit, kind of like they might be cutting the role. I wasn't quite sure. Not sure how far into this I'm supposed to go or not. But so, I was kind of just waiting it out and also wondering what changed in a matter of a month. But it's kind of the nature of the industry, you know. I am a freelancer, so I do sign my contracts per gig.
I don't want you to get in trouble, and I definitely don't want to get in trouble.
I don't know what would get me in trouble in that scenario. I don't know. It was just a weird thing. I don't know if that's normal in the industry. You'd probably know better than me. What's your perspective on it?
I have a lot of questions. I can't formulate a conclusion until I would be able to talk with the powers that be on it, because it seems like that's a position where you want someone to grow into it. Like it doesn't maybe magically happen in the first season that someone's there. Like it's something that you grow into and you get better. And then there's a familiarity with how things work and how the organization works and the viewer.
Mm-hmm. You know, which I feel like we were like there, you know, getting to that point.
I think so too.
You know,
that's why I'm like,
if you look at the history of the role, right?
That's...
It's been five different people and shuffling through that position. You know, it is definitely a tough group to jive in with. Players are great. Players are awesome everywhere you go, for sure. But NHL is another animal in terms of, you know, they're kind of old school as a league. So if you can interpret through the lines on that one. The relationships I made there were wonderful. I look back on that experience. That was a dream job for me. I was selling medical devices in 2015 when they won their last cup?
Mm-hmm.
2015. And Pursuit of Happiness story. I was not doing broadcasting full time once upon a time, and then I realized I was super miserable in sales and I hated it. Part of the story of my sports career. And I was watching TV and I was like, God, I really want to cover that. That's what I want to do. I want to work in sports. I want to be a part of the Stanley Cup winning hockey team. And coming back here, actually, I didn't come back for the Blackhawks to Chicago. I came back for Big Ten Network. So I was with NHL Network prior to that. I made it to the National Network in a lightning speed. That was kind of wild. But anyways, so yeah, I wasn't just some girl they found on the street for the Blackhawks gig. It was, you know, I had a year of the National, you know, experience under my belt, and I was under the impression that it would just kind of be a seamless transition. There was definitely some bumps in the road, but as I figured out what the role was going to entail and how, other members of the broadcast like to incorporate the role and understood different personnel and different personalities. I feel like in year three, I'm like, okay, I kind of know my place here. Like, I got it. This will be good. And so it was a weird turn of events. But honestly, as I look back on it, it was internally stressful for me during that time because I never felt like I was good enough.
So once you finally get word of it, that it's going down this way, how do you dust yourself off after that?
Yeah. That's a great question, and this is the first time I'm actually talking about it publicly, so interesting topic to navigate, but I think for me was, I had to step back and really evaluate, you know, sometimes what you want in life isn't always what's best for you, and if I'm looking at from a, you know, internal perspective, that job was a lot out of alignment for me in a lot of ways because of how I was talking to myself while I was embodying that role. So a lot of it was self-imposed. Other parts of it were definitely external pressures, but the way that I felt for the most part was I don't belong here. I'm not a key member of the team here. I'm just kind of there. So it's not the best feeling to be just kind of there, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of
you didn't want to be the wallpaper.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not necessarily that if that was my role, I'm a team player, then I embodied that. You know, I welcomed that with open arms. I still was a part of a, you know, great franchise here in Chicago. Who can complain being the Blackhawks reporter? To dust myself off was more just like, I think, you know, when we were talking about the ego, my ego probably was hurt more than me. Like, my inner state, I've never felt, like, more internally peaceful and happier, if that makes sense. But my ego was like, no, that's a part of your identity. You need that job, like, to be relevant. You need that job to be important in this city. You need that job. And all these stories I was telling myself weren't actually true. Because when I look back on it, I was like, were you happy? Were you a valued member of the team? Were you always treated in the way that you wanted to? Not always. So you can't beg for people to see your worth, right? This goes in relationships, friendships, jobs. And if people aren't seeing your worth and that you're a valuable person as a human being just because you exist and also are a hard worker and all the other things, then, you know, that's a life lesson. You don't want that in your life, you know? If it's not a – I'm a big, like, energy person. I'm big on, like, spirituality and energies and – I had to step away and realize that some things just aren't a vibrational match. And that's a good, maybe it's a mental cop out to be like, you know what? We're not the right fit for each other. But I think that it was something that was hard for me for sure mentally of just like that, the same stories that you tell yourself of like, oh, was I not pretty enough? Was I not good enough? Was what I said not good enough? But I was like, no, you studied your stuff. I talked to every player in that locker room. I stayed in there extra, you know, just to make sure I understood the person that I was talking to. That was like, I think what I missed the most too, is just the connecting with the human beings. Like, I don't ever put these athletes on a pedestal. I respect them tremendously for their abilities. I think it's wonderful that they can do the things that they do in front of so many people. But like, that's why I started the podcast. Like, I want to do the deep digging. Like, I want to know you. Like, I don't care about, the hockey stuff's cool, but like, let's talk about you. Where do you come from? Like, what about your family? What about your girlfriend, wife? Like, I want to know the full person before I go out there and tell a story about so-and-so, because I think that context really helps. And I don't think every person necessarily goes the extra mile to understand that when they're talking over a broadcast. And that was something that I was like, I can own that. I can bring that to the table, and they're interesting conversations. So like, yeah, I worked so hard on that. I mean, I would pitch like five in-depth stories per broadcast. Maybe two would get in. And that's part of the nature of the role, right? You know, it's reporting in hockey is, unless you're between the benches, you're really, that was part of the argument of whether they were going to cut the role or not, or keep it. But it's hard to report from the Zamboni tunnel where you're seeing the game, not even, not even from mid-ice where you can actually get a perspective of what you're seeing. I would really push to, like, be between the benches. I'm like, I don't care if I get hit with a puck. Like, I want to hear what they're talking about, like, be able to get in the conversations.
Bring the viewer closer.
Yeah, and, like, Big Ten Network does utilize me in that way sometimes, which is super fun. But, yeah, so I don't know if I answered your question in that long-winded answer
of mine.
No, you did. But it's, yeah, that was a challenge. My ego was, like, latching on to that for so long, like, it was a big test, too, of, like, all this work for 2 years, and we haven't even gotten to my health stuff. Like, that's really what prompted me to come back here.
Yeah. I saw you on Instagram talking about your hair falling out,
yes.
And I was like, what?
A lot of that was happening while I was working for the Blackhawks.
Get out of here.
I mean, it was a culmination of a lot of things built up, and it just happened to be settling in at the time where I had just moved back to Chicago. You know, this is home for me. Like, I love being here. This is ultimately what I wanted to do when I started this career was work for Big Ten Network. And so I'm doing that basically, maybe not in the fullest capacity that I would love. But, yeah, so I don't even know where to start with the health stuff. So basically, on the lifeline and the work line, here's what was happening in my life at the time that it all kind of came together. Work and life kind of came up in a big bomb. But basically, one of my best friends passed away. So, okay, I'll back up from where I started in my career. Very SparkNotes version because there's a lot of details that are irrelevant at this point. Basically, I started in sales, volleyball, graduated, moved to Chicago, started in sales, selling freight to truck drivers. Didn't like that. Switched to medical device sales. Didn't like that. In the meantime, I was building my broadcasting resume because I had no experience. Big Ten Network didn't want to hire me in any other role than a volleyball analyst because that was what I played in college. Built up my reel, was doing stuff for free, internships where I could find them, any work. Like, I remember my first football gig, I was, like, sidelined for a high school game, and I don't think I spoke English in that broadcast. Anyways, so then, sure enough, I built up this resume with Big Ten Network. I was like, let me do this digital show. I'll show you I can host, but also, like, hockey was, like, kind of my niche. I was like, let me just put these reports together. I'll produce it. I'll cut the highlights for it, blah, 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 the whole nine yards. So I ended up doing this, like, mini digital show that I packaged for them and all that stuff, and then made a reel from that. And that's when the Hurricanes found me, the Carolina Hurricanes down south, hockey team in Carolina, for those that don't know. Then I made it to the NHL Network. Okay, so this is right when I commit to broadcasting. I make it to – I thought I made it when I got to Fox Sports South. I was like, I'm in. Like, this is great. Like, I was super happy to be there. Like, no complaints. And then a year after that, NHL Network came knocking. And so I got bumped to the national level within 2 years, which was – two moves. So I moved to North Carolina.
Secaucus? Is that where they are?
Secaucus, yep. So in the life side of things, it was wonderful in the career side of things. But in the life side of things, when things are happening so quickly and you're adjusting to a new role and it's on television and everyone's talking about what you look like, there's just so much stuff going on mentally that I think I just buried. Like, I just put it down. Didn't even talk about it. So at that point, I moved to North Carolina. Didn't know a soul. And then from there, moved up to Secaucus, New Jersey without a soul. And the negotiation process was very tricky between Fox Sports South and NHL Network. I was told a lot of things that I'll keep, for us off camera. But it was a very challenging situation. Like, some of the things that I was told, that I wasn't good enough. I was not worth any bit of money that we were talking about. Yeah, like, a lot of things. So that's on the mental side of things, right? So I'm moving to a new city. I'm moving to the national market. I'm not even sure what the heck I'm doing in this industry. I mean, I did know. I was obviously good enough to make it to that point. But I was like, okay, learning on the fly, cutting my teeth. And then from there, moving to a brand new city, then I was like, a year after that, Big Ten Network opened up an opportunity for me to come back home. And thank God they did that, because also on the life side of things, in the midst of that move from North Carolina to New Jersey, one of my best friends passed away. So that was another key part of the, like, I think I was harboring a lot of internal stuff. Like, you can't on TV have a breakdown, or, I mean, not that I would ever want to anyways, that's the stuff you deal with off air, but, like, you have to be so put together and perfect and look a certain way.
And on
all the time. So I don't have my support system with me in North Carolina. I don't have any friends. I don't, it's just like, literally my life was my job. And I wanted it that way. I chose that for sure. But the health side of things, what I'm trying, my lesson here is if you don't manage the things that are biting at you from an internal health standpoint, whether that's anxiety, stress, anything as little as like your stomach hurts when you eat, like little sign, our bodies give us signs in whatever ways. And if you don't listen, it's going to, you're going to get a God punch. You're going to get punched in the face and knocked on your butt if you don't start to listen to the little whispers of like, hey, like could use some attention over here. But you know, when you're so zeroed in on your job and your worth and all, that's the only thing that I thought I was worthy of at that time in my life is like my job. So when my job didn't go well, it's like, oh God, it's the same lessons I learned in Michigan volleyball. Greg would smack me over the head and be like, I taught you this. Like, you already know, like pay attention to how you're talking to yourself. So, okay. All the while we moved back to Big Ten Network. I'm freelancing. That's when the Blackhawks thing came about. That was actually secondary and just kind of an awesome, you know, something that I was like, whoa, I thought this was like a dream of mine. And so my health really started to take a fall. So when I moved from NHL or from Secaucus, New Jersey to Chicago, another mental thing that I dealt with, again, it's like that not enoughness. Like you don't want to be too much, but you're never enough. Like it's that constant, like you don't want to overstep your boundaries, like stay in this box, but like then you're not enough. Like it's this constant back and forth of like, and then I had a lot of body image issues when I came back because I was like, oh, I wasn't skinny enough for NHL Network. I wasn't pretty enough. I didn't look like Kelly Nash is one of my best friends. She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. One of the nicest people I ever meet on MLB Network. And I was like, I don't look like that. And I internalized these things instead of embracing what it was that made me different. My red hair, my pale skin, my curvy body, my athletic body. Like, I'm not like your typical blonde size zero sideliner part. That's just not me, and it's never going to be me. And I listened to the podcast with Kenzie that you had, and I loved that part of it too. So, yeah, all the while, my health took a huge hit. And thank God I was in Chicago and close to family because I hit another probably close to Michigan volleyball-esque low where I was just I came back to what I thought was two different roles. Like, I thought I was going to be, like, embraced in, like, a different way than I was actually, like, where I was plugged in, if that makes sense. So I was like, okay, you're just not good enough. You're obviously, like, I'm a failure. You're this, you're that. All the self-talk that just gets going at you.
Destructive.
Yes. And so from there, I think I physically manifested. I had cystic acne on my face, which in television is one of the worst things that you could ask for. Would not wish that upon my worst enemy, even though I don't really have any enemies. But cystic acne, my hair was falling out. All I wanted to do was sleep. I was so tired. I was irritable, like constantly. Like my mom would tell you, she was scared probably for my life at some points in this time. Like there were some dark moments for sure. Like I would FaceTime her and I'm like, I had like literally huge bumps like on my neck going through my jawline on my face. And then I'd watch back these interviews and I'd be like, oh my God, like horrified. It was like I was torturing myself from the inside and out. You know what I mean? It's like inside I'm like tearing myself apart and then I'm watching it back. I'm like, oh my God.
And then that creates a cycle of you doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. I had a lot going. I mean, I had leaky gut. I mean, I can't tell you. I threw thousands of dollars into my health products. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. They didn't know what, like, yeah, my hormones were off. Like, just nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. I mean, it was, my cortisol levels were through the roof. My doctors were like, you're stressed. You are stressed and you need to stop. I'm like, well, I don't feel stressed. Like, what do you mean I'm stressed? Like, what do you mean? I'm working 7 days a week probably. Like, took two off days during that time when this is happening per month. And
your body's in fight or flight mode.
Yep. I think I'm rambling now at this point. But yes. So,
no, not at all.
It was bad. And my hair is like, part of my identity, too. I probably need to let that go because at some point it might turn white or gray, whatever. But it was
It'll be awesome.
I know. It was like, it was so thick and long. It's back finally. Like, my hair is back. But, like, for 2 years, Lawrence, I have been so committed to my health. Like, gluten-free, dairy-free, healing my gut, like, taking all these supplements, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on functional medicine doctors that can get me back to my full strength. But when I say, like, you have to take care of yourself equally from the inside out, like, sometimes you have to cut toxic people. You have to cut toxic jobs. You have to cut the toxic things that are also perpetuating the stories that you're telling yourself. And so that for me was I didn't want to part ways with some of the things that I was really attached to that maybe were what I wanted, people, you know, jobs, whatever. But the more I step away from it, I see why it was a blessing and, you know, why, if you're spiritual, whatever you believe in, God, angels, you know, that nothing happens by mistake. It all happens the way that it's supposed to. And for me, like, this has been a really freeing time in my life. I haven't been the least – I guess my job side has been the least, quote-unquote, stable, I guess. But for me, I have more than enough, and I'm, like, filling myself back up where I'm like, okay, I'm full strength again. I don't want to go down that path again.
When I watch you on Big Ten, or if I happen to see what's going on with you on Insta, I see this vibrant personality, like, coming through my phone or coming through the television. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from after you get out of something like you just went through?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's something, too, that, like, even when I was struggling, like, when it was time to turn it on, I was always really good at turning it on, even when I didn't feel like it. And a lot of it was genuine, too, in that, like, the rush of doing the job, like, the adrenaline, the talking to the athletes. Like, I do genuinely love that. It's just some of the outside stuff that really gets you down. To answer your question, I think I've always been like that. I am one of four kids. I have three siblings. I'm the only one with red hair. I was like, I came out the youngest middle child, and I was like, you will not forget about me. I will be heard in this family. No surprise that I for sure have middle child syndrome. That's why I'm on television, because I wanted the attention, for sure, 1,000%. The more I've learned, this always comes easier with time, right? Like, you just need to step away and remember what matters. And, like, my friend passing away, Mike Sadler, that was a huge, huge, like, life-altering thing that really put life into perspective for me of, like, I don't need to do sports broadcasting to be a relevant, worthy human being. But it's fun. So as long as I can do it, I'm going to do it. And when it goes, it goes. And, like, reframing that of, like, having that freedom of I can just be myself and that's enough for me. And I don't care who else agrees or disagrees. Obviously, my boss has to agree at some point, but even their feedback sometimes is not always, you know, what you want to hear. But as long as you're coachable and you can enjoy that. I think the self-awareness is power. That's where that comes from, of Greg forcing me to get to know myself, to really understand, like, what it is that makes me, you know, how to help other people feel that way. Like, I love connecting with people and, like, making them feel good, too. Like, when I'm interacting with people in their interviews, like, I want them to know, like, they have all of me in that moment. Like, that is connecting with people is just, like, I love it. Like, I do love the performance aspect of it. I love the energy of being around athletics and, like, also just the reminder of, like, this is life. It's supposed to be fun. We're not here to suffer. And if, you know, you do suffer, there's some moments that happens. I've been through that as well. But, like, in the moments you feel good, like, spread that, you know? And, like, that's something that I've always been. I feel like even in Michigan volleyball, like, I was the light of the team. Like, I would always, like, make fun of myself or, like, make jokes or whatever. Like, even when I, you know, like, when you're not feeling up to it in that way, it's like, you know, we're not here to be serious and angry and grumpy all the time. Like, I think sports are just such a perfect platform to have fun. And, like, that's when I'm my fullest, when I can be my fullest self, accepted as such, and really accepting myself as such.
All right, check your time.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, we still got time.
Okay.
But I feel like now I've been doing most of the talking. We got to turn it back to you.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, I know that there are more questions you want to ask, so
yes.
Fire away. So as you can see, we were running out of time because she had to go get to her acting class. And so part two on her podcast is her interviewing me. And it's really good. We get into some of the business stuff, and she got really personal with me, and I ended up talking about some things that I don't ordinarily talk about in public. So you should go and check out her podcast if you're interested at all in what the rest of the conversation sounded like. You should check it out. She's really good at interviewing, and her approach is it's very warm. So the Michelle McMahon Show, that's her podcast. If you just search it, you'll find it. I will be there. She has talked to some of the biggest people in the sports business for sure. And I think that you'll dig her podcast. Like, she just had a great episode with Eric LeGrand. I know the Daniel Carcillo episode was really good too. Her episode with Heidi Watney. And of course, the episode with me, which is where you would go to have part two of this conversation. So go seek her out, subscribe to her podcast, and listen to my episode. Let me get to your emails. This is from Steve. Steve says, Lawrence, love the pod. Been listening since the launch. Pod questions, but not really to answer on the pod unless you want. Do you record your podcast in the studio? If not, what is your home mobile setup? Just off the shelf mics and a laptop? Two, would you ever expand your personal brand of podcasts? The model you've built could work in other professions. Maybe it's not interesting and wouldn't work, but it seems like there's an opportunity for House of L brand with other Chicago professions interviewed on other pods. Maybe that's a weird question, but I've been thinking about it for a bit now, so I thought I'd shoot you a message. All right. Well, first of all, Steve, those are great questions. Number one, I try to do it in the studio when I can. The score has been really nice. I mean, Mitch Rosen has been really nice about letting me, if it's off hours, you know, and no one's using a studio, then I can use it. Like I recorded the Tim Hardaway interview in the studio. And the same thing with Michelle. We talked in the score studio. But I have the capability of doing it at home. And I might do that in 2020, like starting in 2020, I might do that with, I wouldn't say off the shelf, but yeah, I will. I mean, I started out with USB mics, but I was having a really hard time mixing the mic. So if you go back and listen to the Jason Benetti episode, like episode one, we're on one mic and I didn't like that. So I have what's called a Neewer board. It's just a little teeny tiny portable board that I can use. And I use XLR mics at home. So I usually now do the front and back at home now that I have a mixing board, and I use Adobe Audition. And that'll, I'm sure, change and morph as the years go on with the podcast, like that sort of thing. I prefer to have people in studio because I think that the conversations are better when you're face to face. But the way that I have it set up now, honestly, I'm actually thinking about making the podcast more House of L, literally, like inviting people to my house and sitting in the living room and just talking and see if that, like, that's honestly, I'm trying to get Hood on the podcast, and I think that's probably how we would do it. You know, if I sit down with Matt Abaticola, like, I'd invite him to the house. I wouldn't say meet me at the studio, like that sort of thing. That's a good question. The second question about expanding, I'm trying to do that. I've been asked in a couple of educational situations. I've done some consulting with a couple of places already. I don't want to put their business out there, but I've consulted on educational institutions that aren't mine, meaning DePaul, about doing some stuff, and we'll see where it goes. I will tell you that there are going to be episodes in 2020 of House of L that I host, but I don't interview. I've already reached out to a couple people. Layla Rahimi and I have talked about her doing an episode. There's an episode with Sierra that I want to do that I think is out of this world, like an idea. We just have to kind of pin down, like, what would it look like? What would it sound like? And the guys from It's the Bigs, Gene McIntosh and Terrence Tomlin, I want to do something with them because I think those guys are really, really, really creative. And there's a couple other people that I'm thinking about giving the podcast to, but as far as taking the brand and doing it with other industries, I think that there's the possibility of doing some stuff like that. It's just a matter of trying to find the time, because at this point I have four podcasts and I think there's going to be a fifth one added next year, so we'll see. But that's a really insightful question that you asked, and it is something that I'm looking at going forward. But I appreciate it. If you'd like to email the podcast, if you have a question, houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. This one's from Marco. Marco says, hey, Lawrence, I'm Marco. I'm a truck driver, and I very much enjoy listening to your podcast. I have a few favorites, but I enjoy them all. Sometimes I even pass up my exit. I get so caught up in them. Man, that is a high compliment, Marco. I really appreciate that. Here are my requests for the future. Mark Giangreco, Ronnie Fields, and Val from Windy City Live, and Tia from Leon Rogers Show. Val and I have been texting back and forth. We are hopefully going to do something over the next couple of months. I also want to get Ryan Civerini on from Windy City Live, and the guy that produces that show, or at least he used to. Now he kind of runs all of content, all of non-news content for ABC7. Matt Knutson is a really interesting guy. Tia and Leon. Leon is one of my favorites. I think he's one of the funniest dudes in radio, and I'm hopeful that we can get together and have him on the podcast, because I think the guy is absolutely brilliant. But I like your suggestions. And the Ronnie Fields one, I hadn't thought about that. I hope you enjoyed the Tim Hardaway one, because we talked a ton of Chicago basketball on that one. But I thank you very much. And again, I really do want to get you guys' voices on the podcast. So if you're going to email houseoflpodcast@gmail.com, just send me an audio file. Just do your voice recorder and send it to the email, and then I can put the audio into the podcast. That's what we're trying to do. houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. That's the way that we get down. All right. Big thanks to Michelle McMahon. She was terrific. And like I said, part two of the episode is on hers. The Michelle McMahon Show is the name of her podcast. I'm going to be on there. So you go over there. You can listen to the rest of our conversation. I thank you for all the support. For everyone, happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. I'm going to take a little break. Although we'll have a fresh podcast on Monday, but I'm not going to be on the radio or TV for the rest of the week. I can tell you that much. Enjoy yourselves. Stay out of trouble. I'll talk to you next week. I got a great guest next week, too. It's going to be so fun. Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.